Kia ora, and welcome back to System Fix, a podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain, and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with the reforms proposed for the New Zealand health system. These arose from the report of the Health and Disability System Review Panel, aka the Simpson Report. However, they have been significantly revved up by Health Minister Andrew Little to become what I like to call the Big Little Revolution. On System Fix, I speak with regular panellists and invited guests about the changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date, and what we might expect. Thanks for joining me. Kia ora, and welcome to episode 16 of System Fix. It's been a bit manic lately with COVID in the community, changing traffic lights, and a Christmas rush upon us, but I was keen to squeeze in a final episode before the year comes to a close. With me today to remind us of what has happened with the health reforms rollout this year is New Zealand Doctor Senior Journalist Martin Johnson. Kia ora, Martin.
Kia ora.
Now, you've been hot on the reform trail since the changes got underway. Shall we start with a refresher on the key events for this year?
Okay, well, I suppose the main thing was the government's announcement in April of its health reform plans, announcements led by Andrew Little's health minister and associate health minister Pini Henare. And then it went quiet for a while, but I suppose in the background, the officials were writing the legislation to make it all happen. Then I suppose the next big thing was probably in about September. The government announced the boards of the two new sort of key central agencies, Health New Zealand and the Māori Health Authority, the membership of the boards. Then about a month later, late October, came the health reform legislation, which had been hotly awaited by everyone. The Pai Ora Healthy Futures Bill that was introduced to Parliament, I think, on the 29th of October, there was an announcement of a new ministry specifically to handle disability issues, because, of course, in the April announcement, disability had been sort of put to one side. Beginning of November, the new boards for Health New Zealand and the Māori Health Authority started work. They are interim boards supported by secretariats in the Ministry of Health, and that's until the reforms kick in on the 1st of July next year and they'll become permanent boards. The director of the Health Reforms Transition Unit in the Prime Minister's Department, Stephen McKernan, at about the same time announced the acting chief executives of Health New Zealand and the Māori Health Authority, namely Martin Hefford for Health New Zealand and Chad Paraone, who were both working in the transition unit. Through November, there was a roadshow. The transition unit was explaining the reforms to thousands of health workers around the country. Then in December 9, a significant milestone with the closure of the period for written submissions on the Pai Ora Bill, and some 4,660 submissions were received. Shortly after that, the transition unit published its long list of potential locations for the prototype localities.
So back in April, when the big reveal came out, there were a few surprises there. First of all, I think a lot of people were surprised to see that the DHBs were done away with altogether, because that hadn't been proposed by the Simpson report. There's also was a bit of argy-bargy, I suppose, around what was going to happen with the public health services.
Yes, I think with the DHBs being abolished, yes, that was a surprise. I suppose many had expected that the government would follow the Simpson report to reduce the number of DHBs to, I think it was between 8 and 12. I think perhaps a key thing for the government, or for Andrew Little as Minister of Health, was a feeling that the government or the minister couldn't control DHBs to the extent that they wanted to. And so by establishing Health New Zealand as a central agency, albeit with regions, that it would give the government more direct control and help fulfill one of the other of the government's key objectives, which is to do away with what's been called postcode healthcare, trying to make sure that the same list of services is provided pretty much everywhere in the country. And on your other point about public health services, yes, a new public health agency is being established within the Ministry of Health to develop policy on public health, but the delivery of public health services is within Health New Zealand, and that brings together the 12 public health agencies, public health units at DHBs.
The other big news with the big reveal, of course, was the status of the Māori Health Authority, which had been quite a controversial element when the Simpson report was presented the previous year.
Yes, the Simpson final report recommended the creation of a Māori health authority that really had an advisory role and not commissioning powers. In the lead up to the April announcements, Andrew Little signalled a number of times that he wanted to go further than the Simpson report and did that in April with a Māori health authority that had full commissioning powers and co-commissioning powers with Health New Zealand, really reflecting what was called the minority report within the Simpson report, but it actually represented in the Simpson review the majority of the members of the review panel and its Māori advisory panel.
Along with the Māori Health Authority, we also had the strong role for iwi Māori partnership boards, which came out in the big reveal also, and localities, which we'll go into a little bit more later. Following hot on the heels of the big reveal was, of course, the budget, and all these reforms have money attached to them. So I've just got a note here to remind myself how much we were allocated in this year's budget. So it's around $98 million has been allocated to the creation of the Māori Health Authority, $158 million to creation of Health NZ, $46 million to prototyping locality networking, and $127 million for commissioning kaupapa Māori services, $18 million operating fund to establish iwi Māori partnership boards, and that spending is all over 4 years. Not long after that, we had Mason Drury, who led the steering group that oversaw the subsequent appointments to the Māori Health Authority. So it was all quite busy. And as you said, then we had a bit of a lull while the legislation was presumably being written up.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, a big job, obviously, writing a big piece of legislation like that. And also, we saw that the transition unit hired quite a lot more staff, expanding to 78 staff in the middle of the year, many of them from the EY business solvency, like the director of the transition unit, Stephen McKernan. The transition unit staff now, that'll be changing again as a number of them move over to Health New Zealand as that organisation starts preparing to take on all of the 80,000 staff of DHBs and to manage more than $20 billion health funding.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see the changes that take place. We've got, another 7 months to go. So we're probably going to see a few people on the move. We've already seen a few PHOs where the chief executives, I think an early one, was it Comprehensive Care, John Ross, left relatively early on. We saw a change at ProCare. Of course, Vince Barry down in Pegasus has actually been seconded to the COVID response. And then what have we got in Pinnacle? Helen Parker's been seconded to the transition unit. And of course, the big one was Martin Heffert leaving Katoa Water Compass to go to the transition unit as well. And then at the same time, obviously, we're going to be seeing how they reorganise the Ministry of Health with some of the ministry's key roles going off to Health NZ. What do we know so far about what's happening there?
Not a huge amount. There have been a few things said about digital health. I think a unit in the Ministry of Health is moving to Health New Zealand. But I've got to add, I suppose, that as Health New Zealand grows, the ministry role will shrink and presumably it'll have fewer staff. It maintains its role as the key advisor of the Minister of Health and has a role in steward the system, I think, and in monitoring the health system.
So to date, Martin, what kind of reaction have we got from the other side of the House with regard to these reforms?
Well, when the bill was introduced to Parliament in October in the first reading debate, National made clear its concern about the legislation. It tagged the government's reforms as a socialist agenda and a centralising agenda, and pointed out that the government's centralising of the health system comes at a time when the UK is sort of moving somewhat in the opposite direction. Previously, the National Party in opposition has also spoken out against the government's reforms, criticising its Māori Health Authority proposals. Also, the National Party health spokesperson Shane Reddy has criticised the proposal to do away with DHBs, repeatedly challenging the government to say where those DHBs would be, but I suppose that's now moot and that all DHBs are going.
That brings back to those localities that I mentioned earlier on. There's been quite a bit of confusion, and personally I've also been a bit confused about this, and reading the Pay Order Healthy Futures Bill, because it kind of clarified for me a little bit more that, yes, the localities are going to be geographical, and what is crucial for primary care is actually the locality plans. Is that something you can elaborate on?
A little, yes. I agree about that sort of lack of clarity. I think a clearer distinction has evolved between localities and health and social service provider networks. Although exactly what a locality is and how it will be organised still isn't entirely clear. From my discussions with Martin Hefford as Acting Chief Executive of the Interim Health New Zealand, it looks like localities are emerging as a coordinating organisation for health service planning and integration. You were talking about the localities, you know, becoming now much more sort of geographically place-based things. That's right. So in early December, the transition unit announced what it called its long list of localities, perhaps implying that there will be a short list, although I'm not sure that there will. So that the long list was basically 13 DHB regions or health districts. They left out Nelson Marlborough, South Canterbury, Wairarapa, Hutt Valley, Taranaki, Auckland DHB and Waitemata DHB.
It was a bit confusing, wasn't it? I think we were kind of expecting some kind of list of organisations or groups of organisations that were prepared to put a plan together.
Yeah. So this list emerged out of the transition unit going out to the sector, to DHBs, PHOs, iwi and others, asking for locality prototype proposals, effectively, or asking for ideas on what's working well, with the idea of the transition unit establishing up to 6 prototypes that they want to get going from the first quarter of next year. But the transition unit hasn't really given any sense of which organisations might be involved in providing them. The transition unit published their criteria for prototype localities, and they remain that they want at least one with a high rural population, one with a high Māori population, at least one with a high Pacific population, at least one with a high urban private population, and as I said, I think with at least one locality prototype in each of the 4 Health NZ regions. So now that they've got this long list, they imply that they're going back to the organisations talked to earlier and are looking for some sort of new locality prototype organisation to evolve out of that. So the transition unit is expecting and says they'll support the development of proposals to come up with an idea of what this locality prototype would aim to achieve, how it would be organised and how it would be governed. So I think it's heading towards being an organisation, but it's a bit ephemeral still at the moment.
It was interesting to see ProCare publishing a new website called, was it Reimagining Health? Which to me looked rather similar to the Future of Health, which is the transition unit's website. But I could see that was an example, I suppose, of the primary care sector trying to take the reins a little bit and moving things along and inviting people to get together and work on these prototypes. Also with the legislation, any of our regular listeners will know that in System Fix episode 15, we took a valiant attempt at reading the entire legislation. I think we spent about an hour on it. That was Tim Tenbensel and Gabrielle Baker. And I think Tim made the point that it was quite easy reading, simple English, but there were a few gaps. So obviously it has been a quick draft and there will be quite a bit of work to go on. Martin, you took a look to see how many people have made submissions on the bill.
Yes, the Select Committee Chair, Deborah Russell, told me there had been 4,663 written submissions on the bill by the closing date for submissions was the 9th of December. Officials are working through the submissions now and the committee is planning for hearings over 2 weeks at the end of January and the first week of February. So they're looking at having 5 or so hearing days that they, at this stage, they anticipate hearing from about 330 oral submitters.
I have to disclose interest here. For the first time in my life, I actually wrote a submission to a piece of legislation, very tiny part of the overall bill, but my interest is in transparency and accountability. Although I realise that the elected boards had their failings, I'm really disappointed that we can't come up with a model that includes public meetings for these new agencies. I don't think it should be taken as a given that just because there are no elected members that we shouldn't have public meetings. Public meetings provide us with the access to agendas and meeting reports and minutes that can take a large long length of time to gain through the Official Information Act, alternatively. And also, if we do want to have transformative change for the healthcare system, we should be looking to keep the public engaged as much as possible. And I could go on at length, but other agencies such as councils and health select committees or any select committees have engaged with Zoom and Facebook live streaming, YouTube to get their constituents more involved with meeting. Question is, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is they could decide just to close the doors and not let anybody in. So.
Well, I recall a couple of points on that. I think I asked Andrew Little, I forget exactly when, it would have been earlier this year or late last year, whether there was any plan for public meetings with the new authorities. And as I recall, his response was basically no, and that the provision for public input was around these locality plans. And more recently, since the new boards of Health New Zealand and the Māori Health Authority have been established, I've made an Official Information Act request, which is currently bouncing around between the Minister of Health's office, the Prime Minister's office, and the Ministry of Health, for the release of the two boards' meeting timetable and any agendas and minutes to date. Keep a watching brief on that one and have something to prop your eyes open in the meantime.
Yeah, I don't think boards should be fearful of public access to meetings, because ultimately the Official Information Act or the Local Government Official Information and Meetings Act does allow them to close some meetings to the public relatively easily if they've got issues that are confidential.
Well, the Māori Health Authority co-chairs, Sharon Shea and Tipa Mahuta, are the co-chairs of the Māori Health Authority, and both of them should be well-versed in public meeting protocol, if you like. Being Sharon Shea's just announced her resignation from her role as chair of the Day of Plenty DHB because of heavy workload. She now has co-chair of the Māori Health Authority and a member of the Health New Zealand Board. And Tipa Mahuta is currently co-chair of the County's Manukau DHB. Rob Campbell is chair of Health New Zealand. I'm not aware of him having had sort of public governance roles before. He may have, I just simply don't know. But he's from a more commercial background, so he might not be so au fait with the public turning up.
It was interesting to see that when he was appointed, he was still chair of Sky City Entertainment, but within a couple of weeks, he'd stood down from that. It didn't really seem appropriate to have the chair of Sky City also chairing what would be the agency that employs all the public health workers in New Zealand.
Yes, there didn't seem to have been any discernible public controversy over him being the head of both a public health organisation and one that provides for gambling.
Which may be just a reflection of the fact that the public's mind is elsewhere at the moment, of course. There has been comments throughout the reform process of the wisdom of reforming a system at a time of a pandemic, but on the other hand, people have also made the comment that the pandemic is probably as good a time as any, because it is certainly revealing some of the flaws that the current system has. And we've certainly seen significant issues with having 20 DHBs trying to manage vaccination and testing and so forth in their particular areas, different ways.
Yes, we've certainly experienced the frustration of trying to obtain DHB plans for this or that during the pandemic. I suppose most recently they're planning for COVID in the community.
Much as we do have trouble with getting access to information through DHBs, once we have LNZ and we don't have any public meetings and we don't have a large network of communications managers around the country, presumably with a mandate to communicate, it's going to be even more difficult to keep an eye on what's happening in our health sector, where a large sum of taxpayers' money is being spent. We just touched briefly, and I have to say apologetic that we haven't yet at New Zealand Doctor done a little bit more on the ramifications of the announcements around disability services. I know that at the beginning of the process, back at the beginning of the year, the disability sector was very keen not to be under the same umbrella as health services, and the minister has announced that that is the case, that they will have their own ministry. Okay, Martin, so it might be a bit of a tricky question, but just to kind of sum up, what's your overriding impression of the reforms?
I think it's been quite remarkable to see this government really try to follow the Treaty of Waitangi. Now, Andrew Little expresses himself as determined to do something major about equity. You see that with the way in which they're setting up the Māori Health Authority and trying to connect that with changes at the local level with the iwi Māori partnership boards that started to form in a variety of ways within DHBs, DHBs that have been establishing these relationships. But now that's become very much part of the system.
It's a very good point. There's a lot of passion behind these reforms. And I'm really aware that we do need changes in the health system, and I would really like to see this work, but it is a huge change for the sector. And I think getting people on board, the general public on board, and trusting of what's happening is really important. And it is so difficult at a time when we are really preoccupied by the pandemic and certainly the workforce. However these changes come about, they have to be managed in such a way that the workforce comes along, and also another rider primary care, as with the handling of the pandemic, primary care has felt let down and left behind often. And it is unfortunate, perhaps, that the most tricky part of these reforms seems to be down at the primary care level with the localities and the iwi partnership boards who will be working alongside. So all I can say is in the new year, best of luck to all of you out there in the transition unit and the wider health sector looking to put these changes into place. Good luck. Thanks, Martin.
Thank you.
Kia ora.
There you go, a bit of a whistle-stop tour of the year's health reforms. A taster to keep you going over the Christmas break. It's hard to believe we've made it to 16 episodes, but believe me, there is just so much more to talk about. It's just that as for so much of the sector, COVID has created its distractions and challenges, and sometimes we've been running a little bit behind. Recording by Zoom, and as for today's episode with social distancing, can be a little awkward. So thanks for bearing with me when the sound goes a little AWOL. And a big thanks to sound wizard Steve Hart. It's all due to him that no squealing surprises come through your earbuds. To everyone who's taken part in System Fix this year, a big thanks. A podcast for health reform junkies sound like a long shot, but you guys made it happen by listening and taking part. A special thanks to Gabrielle Baker and Tim Tenbensel, who put their trust in me a year ago and whose knowledge and passion make the podcast zing. We'll be back in the new year. Take care all. Ngā mihi nui, ka kite anō. Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you would like to learn more about the health reforms and other issues in primary care, you can subscribe to New Zealand Doctor, Rāte Aotearoa, on nzdoctor.co.nz. Or to keep up with issues in the pharmacy sector, go to pharmacytoday.co.nz. Both publications now offer monthly subscriptions. Thank you to Steve Hart for post-production work on System Fix. This is Barbara signing off. Until next time. Thanks for listening. Ngā mihi nui.